At Much My Benson, we try to stay as far away from current events as possible. And somehow, even though we recorded this episode in April, early April, mid-April, something like that.
I think it was May. I think we recorded this one in May.
Okay, so we recorded this episode in May. And unbeknownst to us, there was a sadly, tragically, very similar event going on a U.S. military installation, this time in Fort Hood in Texas. And it involved a young woman named Vanessa Guillen, who was... There's some strange similarities between her story and the one described in Military Justice that we saw. Now, tragically, her story ended in a much more brutal manner. She was murdered by, presumably by the person who was harassing her, but that is slightly unclear, and her body was dismembered and mutilated. That whole thing kind of resolved itself near the end of June. It's kind of as a background story going on with all the various protests against police brutality. There's also issues regarding the U.S. military, not surprisingly, and its culture of acceptance of sexual assault and sexual violence. But Josh, I know you've been working on this episode, so you're probably a little more intimately familiar with it than I am.
Yeah, I guess this is sort of the nature of SVU that sometimes we're going to have to do these.
Yeah,
where we have to address the elephant in the room that since the episode of SVU, there's been a much more recent or much more horrific instance of the crime in SVU happening in real life.
Yeah.
Vanessa Guillen is far from the only female service member who's been raped by her peers and then mutilated. There are so many articles you can pull up. There's one on commondreams.org from 2008 that has just a laundry list of women like Lavina Johnson, Tina Priest, Hannah McKinney. There are so many women who have been brutalized and murdered by their fellow servicemen, and the military, many of them have just been ruled suicides.
Yeah.
Reading about these is kind of horrifying, honestly.
Yeah.
It seems like to drop this in light of the Vanessa Guillen killing without addressing that would be irresponsible, I guess, of us.
So apparently in 2018, I'm reading a Military Times piece from 2019. In 2018, 6,050 women reported sexual assault. Now, official researchers extrapolated that number and estimate that actually about 20,500 cases of sexual assault occurred in fiscal year 2018. So it's just...
And that's, of course, inside the ranks of the military.
Inside the ranks of the military. Yeah. So in a large, but not infinitely large organization. Just insane and disturbing.
Estimates are somewhere around, what, like 35% of women in the military have been sexually assaulted?
Yeah. Something like that. Just insane. Now, one thing I would say is that don't do what Vanessa Guillen did and try to solve the issue by yourself if you are ever in this situation, because it's just so disturbing.
Sort of speaking to the point of the episode Military Justice, there's a survey done every 2 years by the military, and the survey revealed that 21% of the women who said they reported a sexual assault also said that they suffered some type of retaliation aimed at stopping them from making a complaint.
Yeah.
This was in an article at The Guardian from May of last year about unreported military sexual assaults, jumping 37% from a previous survey, I believe.
As of 2019, sexual harassment is not considered a crime in the military.
Wait, as of 2019 or until 2019 it was not?
As of May 2019, it was not. So it's possible that it's changed in the last 12 months, but...
I'd posit that it's unlikely that it's changed in the last 12 months.
The military doesn't move very fast on things such as this. It's not clear that anything has changed. So the military seems to be aware of the problem, but
yeah. Yes, and you have higher ups, you know, at least giving the
lip service.
Yeah, lip service. Like Nate Galbraith said that the latest numbers were disheartening regarding that survey that I mentioned were disheartening, and it personally makes him angry. He said he wasn't without hope. I don't understand how you could not be without hope when looking at these numbers.
Yeah.
But there would seem to be some people in power that want to see it changed, but it seems like it's endemic to our military.
Yeah, sadly. Anything else we should add to this? I mean, there's definitely lots of resources online to find out all the twists and turns of this story. It's a wild story that there's going to be true crime podcasts and novels about. It's disturbing and strange and has twists and turns, but it's pretty depressing, frankly.
There's a documentary about Lavina Johnson, who her death was ruled suicide initially, and then her father became suspicious when her body was sent to the funeral home in Missouri, I believe. Then the Army refused to release information about their investigation into her death. She was found in her tent. There were bloody footprints leading to her tent. The autopsy revealed photos that she had a broken nose, black eye, loose teeth, burns from a corrosive chemical on her genitals, and a gunshot wound that seemed inconsistent with suicide.
Yeah.
I don't understand how DOD can rule that a suicide.
Well,
there's a documentary about that case directed by Joan Brooker called Lavina Johnson, The Silent Truth.
There's another case that I'm reading about Tina Priest, who similarly, her death was ruled a suicide in kind of just impossible manner. She's 5 feet tall and yet supposedly shot herself in the chest with an M16, which is, you know, you just sort of start doing the math on how the geometry of that works, and it doesn't really kind of add up. And she had also apparently been accusing fellow soldiers of assaulting her on at least one occasion. So
Hannah McKinney in 2006 was run over by a military vehicle. It was initially ruled that it happened while she was just going to the latrine. Then it was discovered that she fell or was pushed and run over by a vehicle driven by the sergeant who had first sexually assaulted her in her unit.
Yikes.
There are case upon case upon case just like this.
So,
Yep. So,
good times.
I guess we can get to the show now.
We're not looking for real world incidents to follow up on. We want to live in a pretend world where the police only care about solving crimes and the military is good and everybody does their job. But that is not reality, man. It's dark.
I mean, we're probably going to hit some weird episodes coming up too. We'll see. Doesn't seem like this is going to stop given the hellscape we're living in.
Yeah, you know, everything's great, man. Presently, I think we can still travel to Tanzania and Turkey, and that's about it. Maybe one or two places in the Caribbean, but we've got a couple places we can still go.
Yep.
So that's cool.
We can't even escape.
That's fun.
Yeah. And, you know, Border Patrol is snatching up people in minivans in Portland, because that's the thing now.
Yeah, you'd think they would have sprang for, like, the cargo van, right? Don't you think that'd be more efficient?
You'd think.
Yeah, those Dodge Caravans actually have a pretty souped-up engine, believe it or not.
All right, well, on that note, on to the show.
Sir,
you're talking to me?
Yes, sir. I wanted you to know that boy was lying in there. Every word.
Excuse me?
How about we step away? Come on.
All due respect, sir. If Amelia hadn't have been your daughter, she never would have made it through training. Didn't have what it took.
That's enough.
Now hear me out. Whenever she got in trouble, she'd let everyone know who her father was.
Hey, Admiral.
City, sexually based offenses are considered especially heinous. These are their stories.
All right, guys.
Welcome to yet another episode of Munch My Benson, where we take a deep, dark look into the minds of the showrunners of SVU, the longest-running scripted television drama in TV history. My name's Adam. I'm coming to you from Galveston, Texas, where the weather is spectacular, even though you really ought not to go outside yet. Joining me on the line is my co-host, Josh. How's it going, Josh?
Oh, it's great. You know, sunny and terrifying.
Nice. Yeah. Have you been watching anything good recently?
Yeah, we just watched Mindy Kaling's show, Never Have I Ever, on Netflix.
Okay. Really good. I haven't seen it. I watched the season one finale of Succession, which... Wow, that really came out of the blue. That was a humdinger of an episode. The season two first episode was fun because it had one of my favorite Icelandic actors in it. If you've never seen the show Trapped, I highly recommend. At least the first season was awesome. If you like, Nordic noir TV shows, it's a really good one. And then I also watched a spectacular episode of Renegade last night. So I had some good TV going. In this one, Reno Raines has to take care of an 8-year-old girl who's real sassy. And then hilarity ensues, you know. Branscombe Richmond has a lot of great parts in this one. He's got some wild style, and I recommend it.
Oh, I also watched The Man Who Fell to Earth.
Nice.
For the first time.
Yeah, nice.
Never seen it.
It's really weird.
Yeah. It's super weird. Tons of weird nudity, too. Yeah, super weird. You get to see a lot of Bowie dick.
You sure get to see a lot of Bowie dick.
Oh, speaking of which, I also watched the last two episodes of Breeders. Uh-huh. The Martin Freeman show. And in those last two episodes, he's praying to... He doesn't believe in a god, but he starts praying to Bowie.
Yeah, well, I get it. Let's get into our episode this week. This week, we're doing our first Danny Pino episode. And it turns out that our first Danny Pino episode is a Danny Pino-centric episode. And we will get a lot of Pino in this one.
A lot of peen.
Big amount of peen in this one. It is from season 15. It's called Military Justice. You want to give us the rundown on Military Justice, Josh?
Absolutely. Okay, so season 15, hour 8, but kind of episode 7 if you're watching on Hulu, called Military Justice, is basically Liz from the OG Roswell gets arrested for DUI and is super belligerent per the dash cam footage we see more than once. She looks like she's been truly messed up in a sexual assault, her Coast Guard uniform in tatters. We don't find out how she prized herself away from her alien romance, but I think it's safe to assume she's on a mission to infiltrate the lowest branch of the military on behalf of Max. She's calling herself Amelia now, and she's cuffed to a hospital bed on account of the whole DUI thing. But when Benson and Amaro come back to visit in the morning, she's out of it like she's been sedated. She is not forthcoming with details, given that this is an episode of SVU, and she was in uniform. I think we know where this is going. The seaman, or is it coastman?
Coasty.
Coasties. the seaman she was drinking with were clearly the perpetrators of the rape, not knowing that Liz literally fucks with aliens who have superpowers, but apparently completely aware that she's a fucking admiral's adopted daughter and not caring. Their commanding officer ships them off to Somalia for a, quote, training mission, which screams cover-up. Aliens can find you anywhere, fuckos. So can SVU, apparently, because these fuckers are back getting questioned the next day. of the two samples of DNA, only one can be tied to these three perps, which means there was a fourth participant in the gang rape. If you've ever watched television, you know it's probably not someone you haven't seen on screen yet. So we wait for Taverts, the fuckmookiest of fuckmook CEOs ever conceived, to get fingered. Rollins gets the idea for Amaro to use his almost ex-wife's guilt for whatever sneaky thing she's got planned for the weekend to guilt her into getting the Coast Guard's file on the Amelia case, which almost torpedoes the case because the testimony in a military court is forced and therefore inadmissible in a court of law. It does give Amaro the crucial information that he can hint at, though. After Amelia's testimony gets picked apart by the defense, Benson and Rollins get one of the perps to flip. The one who was along for the ride had been attacked by others on base because he was gay, which the CO used as leverage to get him to go along with the rape plot. They planned everything because she didn't want to fuck her CEO, who viewed this as unbecoming of a coastie because coasties are supposed to do whatever the fuck their CEO tells them to do, including blow them. Then, outside the courtroom, Lieutenant Commander Dickbag tries to tell his mentor, the Admiral, that his daughter was a shitty coastie and invoked her father's name whenever shit got real. The Admiral hauls off and cold cocks the fucker. Cut to the verdicts, all guilty. They're going up the river. Presumably Liz's alien friends are coming for them. Prepare for the probings, gents, because y'all about to get fucked.
Roswell style. Liz is getting honorably discharged from the Coast Guard, but her dad's proud of her in a sincerely tear-jerking moment. Unfortunately, she's going to go off and become a manipulative reality TV producer after this, surely eroding all of that paternal pride when she shows up in Unreal. End episode.
Dick Wolf.
Dick Wolf.
I gotta say, I was really shocked at how competent this episode was. It was really good.
Yep. Yeah, it's a really good app.
It had great performances from the mains, including Danny Pino, who I often criticize. It had really great guest performances. It had a cogent storyline, completely lacking from the last episode we've done.
Yeah, it was all one plot, no crazy flipping of the script. Yeah. Like, everything makes sense together. It's one cohesive narrative.
Nobody jumped off a building in the middle of the episode with no explanation for why.
Yeah. Nope. This is a normal episode.
Yeah.
A normal episode of television. Like, completely conceived in, like, a traditional television.
Yeah, competent professionals made this structure. Episode. I guess, okay, so because it's a good episode, it's kind of funny how this works. We have less to talk about because it's a good episode. But I want to start with the IMDb pages of these characters. Because, I mean, there's one elephant in the room, and that's Danny Pino, who is a major character in SVU. He'll be on 94 episodes of SVU, which is just, it's just mind-boggling that we've watched 13 at this point, and there are 94 Danny Pino episodes alone, and he was sort of the shortest-lasting main character of them all, I would say. I mean, barring the people in season one.
He was meant
one.
To replace Stabler.
Exactly. He was a huge character in the show. He's had a big career in TV. For me, his most memorable term is as Armadillo Quintero in The Shield. He was the big bad guy in one of the seasons of The Shield. He was also, though, in 151 episodes of Cold Case. He's in Mayan, the FX motorcycle show right now. He was in The Burning Plain with Charlize Theron, John Corbett, and friend of the show, Sean McGrath. So he's been in a lot of stuff, and he really kind of brings it here. We get a lot of I can never remember his real name. It's Nick Amaro backstory in this one, because his dumb ex-wife is trying to date a guy, and so leaves the kids with him. I think it's implied that the ex-wife, the guy she's dating, is the one that provides her with the materials that she passes on to Amaro, which almost gets him, you know, which almost gets the case turned to a mistrial.
Yeah, by the Garrity rule.
Yeah, exactly. Which is kind of fun. And it, you know what? It kind of made sense. You'd think he would kind of, I don't know. It's actually an esoteric enough thing that a local cop might not have to deal with that too much. Of course, you mentioned Shiri Appleby extensively in your intro.
Yes.
She's had a lot of stuff. I mean, in addition to Roswell, she was in ER for a season or two. She was in Charlie Wilson's War. She's been a lot of good stuff too.
She's a recurring on Girls.
Yeah.
She's Adam Driver's girlfriend for a little bit.
Now, for me, the most recognizable characters are two of the kind of smaller parts. Will Janowitz, who played the gay rape, you know, a sister, he was none other than Finn DiTrollio from The Sopranos, who was Meadow's dipshit boyfriend who wants to be a dentist and ends up spilling the beans about Vito's homosexuality, which causes him to get murdered. So he's kind of a major plot point of one season of The Sopranos, and he's really memorable from that. And then we also have John Getz as the father Admiral, who is in everything. Getz is in everything. I mean, for me,
I'm assuming he's Chris Getz's dad, right?
You would think, yeah. It's Chris Getz of the Kansas City Royals fame.
Now in the Chicago White Sox front office.
Oh, nice. For me, Getz is always going to be a part of the greater Basha-verse, because I believe you could say that I haven't seen the latest season, but in my mind, his Bradley Walker commits the gravest sin in the universe of Bosch, and that is killing Basha's mom and then covering it up. He doesn't do anything to Basha's daughter, and I don't want any spoilers if somebody tries to mess with Basha's daughter, but killing Basha's mom is a grave-ass sin. And it fucks Bosch up for his entire life. He's listening to jazz because of what this fucking guy did. This fucking admiral who killed his mom.
But he's also got a pretty bitchin' house in the hills. So.
He has a great, great house in the hills. He's got.
I can't remember. Is Eric Overmeyer one of the producers on this season or not? I didn't look.
I don't know either. I didn't.
But Eric Overmeyer is the Bosch creator.
Yeah.
Who also worked on. He was the co-creator of Treme with David Simon.
And then finally, I mean, Terry Serpico is a really recognizable face. He's Lieutenant Commander Taverts, the top
the fuckmook CEO.
Yeah, the worst guy. Really recognizable guy. I would say he's kind of like a more attractive Barry Pepper. You know this guy's face if you've been watching a lot of TV. His biggest role, I guess, is as Catherine Bell's husband in Army Wives, but I feel like I've seen this guy in a million things. And then, of course, his defense attorney is none other than TV's Delaney Williams, aka Jay Landsman from The Wire, who I'm a huge fan of. He comes back to SVU a bunch. He's in SVU, I think, in like 13, 14 episodes overall.
Yeah, and he's always the most horrible, horrible person as a defense attorney.
Yeah.
Like, I love Delaney Williams, and he's always playing such an unrepentant prick in all of these episodes.
He sure is.
He's really good at it, though, so.
I mean, next thing I really wanted to point out is that I always take time to go through all these locations that they point out in these episodes, because usually it's something kind of funny comes out of it. In this one, surprisingly, almost all the locations they use are real. Now, the Coast Guard station that they go to, that's a little bit of a fub. They talk about it being in Sheepshead Bay. Now, there was a Coast Guard installation in Sheepshead Bay in the 40s and 50s. It was a maritime training center, but that closed down a long time ago. Now it's a community college. The real Coast Guard station is on Staten Island, and they obviously go there because you can see the Verrazano Narrows Bridge in the background of one of the shots that they do. But that's just like a little fub just to avoid having to put the real thing in there.
Government clearance.
Exactly. But the rest of the cards are all real places. The police precinct they go to is not the third precinct like they say, but it's actually where the first precinct is. And the DA's office is where they say it is. And then finally, the bar where the assault took place is at a place they call it the Seahorse Bar and Grill. In reality, it's called the Cowgirl Seahorse. And it is the actual bar that they go to. It's shocking that they would find such a place. It is described on Google as, quote, a casual restaurant with offbeat nautical decor serving Southwestern faves, some with seafood twists. So it sounds like it is a little slice of Galveston, Texas in the big city.
Or at the very least, if this were in Austin, we would probably have ended up going there after work.
Yeah.
And it would be called Captain's Bar by anyone who rents paddleboards.
Yeah, you got to spend more time down here, man. There's so many Captain's Bars here. There's so many bars with slutty mermaids drawings in the background. Surely. A fantastic place.
I mean, I assume this is basically like the Gaff. Like, Galveston is just the Gaff.
Oh, basically. Essentially. Yeah. I mean, the good parts of Galveston are the Gaff. Old people who...
The Gaff being a bar in Port Aransas.
Yes. Old drunk people. That's what you find there most of the time.
Galveston, oh Galveston, I still hear your sea waves crashing while I watch the cannons flashing. I clean my gun and dream of Galveston.
Now, the thing about this episode is it was competent. I mean, there was like not many bizarre things to point out. There were some fun lines I really liked. They were initially the fingers were pointed at the quote unquote Mexicans who worked in the kitchen at the Seahorse. And one of them had a fun line.
You were dancing. One thing led to another.
No, we didn't rape her. She came back in here putting her chichis up in my face. I figured she was trying to make her buddies hot.
But really, like, that, you know, served the plot, so there's not too much I can say that's wrong about it.
Yeah, can we talk about how when she's trying to cover for her rapists, she says that she lost her tolerance from alcohol and OCS and drank too much?
Yeah.
Then she says she's an ensign, and ensigns are supposed to be able to take care of themselves. I immediately jumped to Star Trek, which is where most ensigns ever come into my life.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking, wait, I don't feel like Wesley Crusher could take care of himself.
No, Wesley Crusher couldn't do shit. I mean, he could solve trans-dimensional problems occasionally, but he could barely get to work on time, and he didn't know where he was half of the time.
Yeah. And, I mean, Ensign Rowe, she could take care of herself.
Big time. Yeah. Ensign Rowe is top-notch. God, there's some really disturbing lines about the rape that they get into, like...
All it takes is one juror to believe that she likes rough sex.
Rough sex? It practically tore her apart.
That are just the kind of things that you don't say on any show besides Law & Order SVU. And then the whole Graver, he's the gay Coastie, his whole monologue about when he's coming out to them is pretty disturbing shit.
I was at a bar in Sheepshead Bay. I'm gay, okay? Okay. Usually people can't tell. I got a little drunk. There were three guys from my base. They started calling me names. Homo fag. I walked out, they followed me. Pushed me in an alley. I woke up in a hospital bed with internal injuries.
Yeah, that one, it's really dark and sad. Man, you feel so fucking bad for this guy.
Yeah.
It's weird. The writers actually use kind of a bit of, they withhold a little bit here because, yeah, like, it sounds like his attack was much, much worse than he's actually, like, confessing to or disclosing. It sounds like the attack is bad. And he doesn't explicitly say he was raped, but it sure sounds like he was.
It sure sounds like it. And it sure, yeah, sounds,
and raped for being gay.
Too. I mean,
the circular logic in that is
really fucked up. Yeah, it's really fucked up. I woke up in the hospital bed with internal injuries. That's implying,
yeah,
some fucked up shit. And his testimony about Albert's rape is also, yeah, fucking disturbing. Gosh.
Let's go back to a little bit of the investigation. When they go see the CEO, he basically says that she got raped because she has poor judgment.
She was publicly intoxicated. She was arrested for DUI. She's supposed to be with a buddy at all times off base. All this shows very poor judgment on her part.
She was gang raped, and he calls it poor judgment on her part.
Easy, Olivia. It's not our turf.
They don't want women here in the first place. She gets raped, they're going to use it to end her career.
What the fuck? Liv comes out of that office incensed. She is so fucking pissed.
Sure.
Amaro knows what the military is like for women. His wife is, obviously, because she's DOD. He's just like, yeah, being a woman in the military is a fucking horrible thing. Like, your existence is basically terrible the entire time. And he knows he can't, like, candy coat the fact that the military just chews up and spits out women who ruffle any feathers.
Yeah.
Oh, why the fuck did the cook run?
I don't know. That's unexplained. I think it's an implied
immigration thing.
Immigration thing. That was my feeling, but I felt like they could have just said something to kind of enlighten that, because this is two episodes in a row when we've had people running for absolutely, yeah, no obvious reason and potentially getting themselves in much greater trouble because of that.
Yeah.
Or dying in the case of the last episode.
Cross-checked by Rollins into that like it's like an electrical box, I think. But he gets cross-checked, yeah, into that fucking thing and just like takes a spill.
He was wounded after that. If we're gonna get to a callback of that one, the best episode we've watched so far, which was Ridicule from season 3, we gave it a rating of 8.125. In that episode, the male victim was tied down and raped by three women. And repeatedly throughout the show, they're wondering how the male victim could be overpowered by three women. I think this episode showed how that could happen because Rollins destroyed that guy.
Yeah, she lit him up.
Just crushed him.
She lit him up like he was Joe Theismann's knee. And
oh my god. So I think we should just get to some segments. I mean, we've already kind of gone over.
Well, here, I've got some more notes.
Please, yeah, please fire away, because I don't have very many notes about this episode.
I don't want to, like, ascribe a normal thought process to Amelia in a post-traumatic state, but she keeps saying she doesn't want to let down her family and draws her father as this guy who you wouldn't believe would understand what happened to her. It's obviously not hard to assume that an admiral would be like that. But when he gets, yeah, there, he's fucking awesome.
Yeah, he's totally fucking awesome. He totally stands up for her.
Her mom kind of sucks. Yeah. But he is, like, completely there for her. Yeah.
You know, it's a good setup in the show because the mom is kind of what you expect. Maybe appearance before reality. Right. And so you expect the dad to kind of be that buttoned up, tight military career guy who cares more about the Coast Guard than he does his own family. And that's absolutely not the case.
Right. Oh, fuck, can we talk about Wooten for a second?
Yeah, talk to me about Wooten.
Whenever he's on screen.
Wooten being one of the perpetrators.
Yeah. Played by Aaron Dean Eisenberg. Whenever he is on screen, I want to jump through the screen and just fucking destroy this guy. Like, I want to beat him like Jared Leto gets beat in Fight Club. Like, maybe it's the way his hair is parted.
It is. It's like a strong dipshit Nazi vibe that that guy gives off.
If that's what it is, then good on the hair department. Like, way to
yeah,
go.
I mean, I think it was a good performance. He didn't have very many lines, and he's really hateable.
He's Tippett, instantly shit-heel misogynist serial raper.
Yeah, exactly. Tippett comes off as kind of, like, confused, you know, deer in the headlights. He's the other lower-order rapist.
Yeah, the one who used the condom.
He did use the condom because he respect his rape victim.
No, that's not why.
No, it's because of his wife.
It's because he's married.
No disrespect, but she's the one who let loose. I hear you. Look, you know what I did wrong? I cheated on my wife.
So you did have sex?
Yeah, that's what it was.
You wear a condom?
Yeah, I told you I'm married.
He's okay with raping someone, but if he's going to do it, he's going to wear a rubber.
But he didn't come off to me as a monster like the other two rapists did. Not.
There's one guy calling the shots and one guy that's totally on board. And then the other guy is like, well, this is my CEO. I have to listen to him. And then the last one's like, the CEO has shit on me.
Yeah. I have to do this or else, you know, terrible things are going to happen. Do we actually find out what happened to his character, the Graver character?
I think they pled him out because they don't read a guilty verdict and he's not still one of the defendants.
Exactly. But we don't find out if he gets discharged, if I recall.
I suspect that he probably pleads out to a lesser charge because he's cooperating and he gives testimony.
Yeah.
But that sort of like left.
It's an implied thing, which is fine because it totally makes sense that would happen and you don't have to make a big deal about it, honestly.
Right. I kind of want to, whenever we have one of these, we should probably give a nod in some way. Whenever this happens, maybe we have a song or a sound cue or something insane. But with these fuckers in custody, Amaro drops the getting turned out an Attica threat of an
sure
awful
does.
Future consisting of rapings on the reg to a rapist.
I'm definitely drinking to this one, yeah.
yeah. These SVU cops do this so much. Like, it happens enough that we have to have, like, alarm bells going off.
Have the reggaeton horn go off when
we're... Yeah. Or Vuvuzela or something. Something insane.
Absolutely. My God.
We have to do something, because it happens quite a bit. I'm shocked that it took us this long to get to an instance of where this happens.
But there's nothing the SVU cops love more than prison rape. It really is, like, one of their favorite things. Oh, my God.
See, this is why everyone in Sector is calling her a whore. When we left her, she wanted more. She probably went out and banged one of those Mexicans after.
Really? So that's it? That's all you got?
You know, I want you to think about what you just said a year from now while you're getting turned out by your cellmates in Attica.
Thank you for noting that.
Yeah.
Seems inappropriate, but I guess...
They're the ones doing it, not us.
Sure is.
we're like celebrating the shock of this continuing to be the thing. I do like that her dad, when he shows up, he finally gets her to spill on who the fourth perp is.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought they did a really good job developing these characters in a short amount of time. Like, the dad didn't need very much page to jump out and be what you weren't expecting, but in a believable way. So good on John Getz and good on the writers for that one.
Indeed. We should probably give a shout out. It was written by Lawrence Kaplow. And obviously, any TV show is, you know, written by the staff.
Yeah, committee.
It's revised and all that. How weird was it that military protocol is not resist sexual assault? If that's true, if that's actually true and not just like a plot device, that's fucking insane.
Pretty fucked up. It wouldn't surprise me, but it's pretty fucked up. I mean, I suppose... What is left unsaid is that the implication, if you resist, you're likely to be killed, and they would rather have you not be killed, but it's pretty fucked up.
Okay, so when Barba is talking about the defense team that's going to pick her apart, were you expecting it not to be Buchanan, not to be Delaney Williams? Like, I was expecting it to be, like, fucking Coast Guard lawyers or something. I was not expecting him.
Are you a CEO, CFO, or other executive facing these or similar charges?
Why should you go to jail for a crime someone else noticed? You don't need double talk. You need blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. No habla español.
I had such a big smile on my face when he showed up. I was like, oh my God, I love that guy's huge head. Yeah, because I look at the cast every time, but I don't really look at the recurring cast members that often, so I didn't see his name pop up before I started watching. I look at the guest stars.
How great was it when Taverts tries to impugn her after Graver's testifying? Taverts tries to impugn the Admiral's daughter to the Admiral.
Oh, yeah, that was...
And then we get what we want
for
this fucker to get his smug fucking face punched in.
He gets lit up in
Daddy
the nose.
Daddy decks him. He fucking decks him. Like, he is on his ass. And then we cut straight from that to the slew of guilty verdicts.
Yeah.
So it's like just a double gut punch right there to
and
that
he's got
fucker.
Big ass shiner on his eye after that. Yeah, it was good. It was a very gratifying end to that performance. So with that in mind, how would you describe the Dick Wolf? You wrote the write-up on this one.
Yeah, so it's weird. There's sort of a weird issue where the Dick Wolf is actually after the button, where it's this Amaro. It's the Amaro and his ex-wife, like, him telling her that she has something to watch out for. So it's really, like, setting up some semi-serialized plot point that's going to come up later. I mean, really, the spiritual Dick Wolf to the whole thing is the guilty verdict and then her dad, you know, saying that he's so proud of her.
Exactly. When she gets honorably discharged and he's proud of her, that's like, yeah, we have this, like, perfect point for a rising heroic Dick Wolf, and instead we get the showrunners of second half SVU
building the mythology, basically.
Yeah, which is super annoying.
The Dick Wolf should have come right when he's like supporting her, and that would have been like genuinely sort of heartfelt and tear-jerking. You actually feel for her, and her dad's got her back the whole way.
So I'm gonna say should be a supportive father Dick Wolf, not a dumb Amaro backstory Dick Wolf.
Yeah
All right. I like that. Should we get into ranking this thing? I mean, I think it's pretty obvious. It's a Pino era episode. The big bad is clearly the lieutenant commander. It's not even close.
I believe the big bad is the Coast Guard.
They asked me in front of 20 officers how wide I opened my mouth during oral sex.
I am so sorry.
You think that's the Coast Guard in general? I mean, I think you could say that that's a good point.
Who is it?
It's my CEO. It's Commander Taverts.
Taverts? I've known him his whole career. Why would he do something like this?
Oh, God, he's been trying to sleep with me since I got here. He said that I needed his help if I wanted to get ahead.
And you said no.
He did not like that. And that no one says no to a commanding officer, especially a woman. I am so sorry, Dad.
No, no. You have nothing to be sorry for.
There's a culture of rape that's, like, clearly...
There's a code of conduct that is definitely pro-rape, so, okay.
It's literally codified.
So the reason that you did not say no or fight during a violent, vicious assault was because you were following what you believed to be military protocol.
That's correct.
Okay, so we're saying the United States Coast Guard. I hope they're not listening because they are an important part of my job. But
I have a cousin who's Coast Guard. The episode is doing it.
Yeah, this is in the universe of Law and Order SVU, not in the real world. I don't think it was ripped from a headline. It clearly was ripped from a string of headlines, but not from one specific one.
Like it has echoes of
the
of
Citadel,
like Tailhook and
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll put Tailhook there.
But yeah, this is more of like a systemic thing.
Exactly. Should we just get into ranking this? Again, I think SVU absolutely would investigate this crime.
Yes,
so,
inarguably.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a good run of those. It's been a while since we had a one that they definitely would not have.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's get into ranking this thing. Every week, again, we do a ranking system. We have four metrics that we use. We rank them between 1 and 10, 1 being not great, 10 being fantastic. We rank them on quality, guest performances, how problematic they were, and the depth and breadth of the lives ruined. Those latter two, paradoxically, the worst they are in the episode, the better they are in this ranking system, which I think makes sense to most avid viewers of the show. So start off, Josh, what do you think about the quality of the show overall?
Just straight up general quality of the episode. I don't know how many we've done that are clearly better than this.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's got to be at least a 9, right?
You think at least a 9? I think I think the ones that are nines are the really, really standout ones. I call it an 8, but I'm willing to go 8.5.
It's really fucking good.
It's really good, but it's not jaw-dropping, you know?
No, but it does something that SVU doesn't generally do, which is actually develop a cast of characters very well and then actually have you feel something.
That's true. That is true. But I think...
I mean, there are multiple moments when you're getting teared up.
I think, so episode 5, Juvenile, where that kid, we did in episode 5, where that kid goes to prison for the rest of his life at the end. That's a stunner. We gave that one a 9. So you're saying this is as good as that one?
Oh, I think this is as good as that one.
Okay. I'm just playing devil's advocate here. I do agree with you that it's a really good episode. It's just how good we're saying it is. I'm fine with 9.
Well, it's also not going to, it's not like it's going to set itself apart with other stuff. Like, it's not super, super fucked up or anything. I think just the general, if we're just looking general quality of the episode, I think it's a 9.
I'm fine with that. Okay, so let's go to the guests. I thought they were great guest performances. Yeah. I thought this is at least an 8.
Yeah, agreed.
I mean, it doesn't have Luke Perry in it or anything like that. It's not like an epical defining actor that's co-starring in it, but...
Going against type. It doesn't have that crazy stunt casting thing going on.
Yeah, it's not like the James Spader episode that I hope we get sometime soon. But it is really just top to bottom. Every single one of the actors is good. They're doing the thing
they're supposed to do.
Yeah, exactly. They're really good.
Which, in some cases, is you want to jump through the computer or jump through the screen and, like, kill them.
Yeah, but that was... Yeah. I mean, that's exactly who you want. But, like, the Will Janowitz character, I mean, Shiri Appleby, John Getz... I thought they were all great. So we'll say 8 for that one. How problematic it was. There were some good lines and it had some definitely disturbing sections.
The accounting of both rapes
was disturbing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's disturbing.
But.
And it's also dealing with like systemic issues in the armed services where this is par for the course.
But we're talking about a show that goes to some places that are insane.
No, I think this is sort of middling in this regard.
Above like average, but I would say
4 or 5.
Okay. 5? 4.5? We can give it.
Let's go 5. Let's go full 5.
Okay. What it lacks in creativity, at least as far as the assaults, it makes up for in the descriptions of them and how visceral and disturbing they are. So I think that works. And then let's talk about the lives being ruined by this.
Her career's over.
She's
also dealing with a fallout from a rape.
Yes, but she was honorably discharged, which means she's not going to have any troubles getting another job. So
yeah, if you're honorably discharged. To a job that she wasn't going to be able to go back to anyway.
Exactly. So, I mean, if she had been dishonorably discharged, you have to report that in every single job application you make. And it will follow you the rest of your life. But an honorable discharge is a positive note in your CV. They're not going to ask you about it. They might ask you about how was your service, but they're not going to ask you, like, why did you leave the armed forces? It's normal for people to leave.
There's also the presumption that there are many other victims of Taverns.
That's true, but they aren't named.
Janowitz's character, Graver.
Graver's.
His life is probably ruined. He's getting a dishonorable discharge, surely.
You'd think so.
Because he went along with it.
It's possible, again, because they leave it kind of open-ended. It's possible that it's dishonorable. It's possible it's a general discharge, which I think...
I don't think the Coast Guard's going to be forgiving of him. Because presumably he still has to plead out. He's still he's guilty of something.
Yeah, he's out of that. It's just like, in what way is he out?
I don't think he can get anything other than dishonorable. He's surely pleading guilty to a lesser felony.
So in the long run, his life is probably the most fucked. Of anybody
yeah,
else.
And I mean, he's a victim and getting fucked here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, I don't know.
I mean, it's not crazy fallout, but it's not...
It's a 5. I mean,
it's not crazy by SVU standards.
Exactly.
We should clarify that. But yeah, I think it's a 5.
I think it's a 5. So that puts us at a 6.75. It's above average. Solidly above average.
Yeah.
Not the best we've seen, but certainly above average.
And largely not the best we've seen... Because it doesn't have the insane things going for it that some of the other ones do.
Exactly.
Like that's really the key drawback to this episode is that there's nothing just batshit crazy going on.
There's nothing completely batshit crazy. It's so hard to judge these things, right? Because everything that happens in this show is terrible, whether it's kidnappings or rapes or whatever. But there is a scale that the SVU writers have created. And sometimes we are talking about just
possibly unwittingly created.
Yeah. just abominable things happening to young children, and it didn't have that happening. I do feel like even the Graver character, right, the guy who's outed as gay and also raped, his biggest fault, right, is that he wasn't the one that came forward. He wasn't as strong as Albers in reporting his own, you know, rape. And so in some ways, again, not that he deserved to have his life ruined in this way, but he could have stood up for himself, in which might have given him a better outcome.
Yeah, well, it's basically they used toxic masculinity against him.
Yeah.
To make him be more masculine.
Big time.
Yeah.
Well, you got any other notes about this one? I mean, I think it was a really fun episode. I highly recommend people watching it, but it was the
kind of... Yeah, it's really good.
It's
not like Asunder. It's not like...
Gone Baby Gone, which we covered in episode 4.
And Asunder was the terrible one with the cop perp and his wife.
Yes, Asunder was not good. Not good and not fun. Neither one of those two. This one was really good, not necessarily fun in the way that we think of SVUs, but really good and had really good guest performances. So I do recommend it.
Absolutely.
But I think, unless you have any other notes, it's time to fire up the randomizer again.
Let's fire it up.
I'm pressing the buttons now, inputting all the variables. And we are getting episode 182. That is season 8, episode 21, an episode called Pretend. So give me a second, I'll pull it up. According to the Hulu caption, a teenage boy dies in what appears to be an accident, but his friends are hiding the truth. So it looks like it could be a fun one.
All right, so this one has guest stars, I hope? None that stick out. It's got a lot of the Stablers, though, so it's going to be probably a pretty Stabler-centric episode.
A Dickie-heavy episode.
Yeah, probably a lot of Dickie.
Oh my gosh, very long plot.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Yeah, it's wow. Like 8 paragraphs. It's nonsense. Someone put in a lot of work, and then no one ever put in an episode summary.
No.
So we don't have a quick one to go with.
Well, yeah, we'll see how this one goes. It should be fun. But I guess until next time, have a good one, Josh, and I'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Hope this is a good one.
I'm an ensign. I am supposed to be able to take care of myself.